Lift off.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Our guest is Lyle Blackburn, author, television star, radio star, and all over about cryptids. We've got, of course, tonight with us, first of all, Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling. How are you doing, Papa Stro?
Blessed to be here with you all, and can't wait for tonight.
Well, me too. Thank you very much. It's always good to have you here. Dave Atwell, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing very well. It's good to hear you guys are doing the same. Got a little bit of rainy weather out here in the Carolina coast, but otherwise, a nice 50-degree night. I like the cold, rainy weather, so, you know, I know there's not a whole lot of people out there in my ballpark, but I don't know, there's something about these fall Carolina nights. Can't really beat them, man. They're good to go, so enjoying it this evening.
I'm digging it, man. Power walking as we speak.
Yeah.
All right. And we had a big tan this weekend in Jacksonville, North Carolina, at the Jacksonville Comic-Con. Thanks to both of you for being there and helping put that show on. Had a lot of people. It was filled. And Aqua Dad won the costume contest. What a great guy.
Yeah, Josh is something else, man. What a good guy. You know what I mean? And it's always nice to see the good guys win. And, man, he was such a gracious winner. And, you know, it made it worthwhile.
I just want to thank everybody that pitched in and made this possible and made it success for the community, for the area. It was a really great time and just blessed to be a part of it. So, I mean, it's always great to see things like that happen.
It was.
Yeah, most definitely. And I tell you, if it was a fine example of teamwork, people just pulling together, doing their part, and, you know, it's sometimes you work with people that if you have to get them to step a little to the left, they vapor lock up. Everybody just seemed to have a common goal of making things go off without a hitch. And everything from our guests to our vendors to the attendees. And hats off to Dr. John, the brains of the operation. He's John, you've done one heck of a job. And as always, and, you know, without going into the gory details of the few obstacles we hit, I mean, pulled off one heck of a show, and it was a fun show. I hate like crazy to use the F word here on the show, but it was a fun show. It wasn't one of these shows that felt like you were getting, you know, it didn't feel claustrophobic. It didn't feel you know, you were getting mugged, you know, paying $150 for a guy's autograph and you shake his hand and you're gone. It was a fun show. Everybody was smiling and cutting up and having a good time and eating off each other.
All ages,
I mean,
all ages, young,
yeah, absolutely,
young people, adults, everybody had a great time.
I mean, we saw grandparents in there with their grandkids. We saw, you know, kids in there having a good time. We saw, you know, friends from the community. And again, the guests, you know how sometimes, you know, you go to these shows and it's, well, I want to sit next to that guy. And, okay, well, I have to sit next to him and I don't want to sit next to her. And, you know, there was a couple of them and they were just total strangers that, you know, it does my heart good when you set them up and then 5 minutes later you look over and they're over there talking to one another, laughing and cutting up. And I'm like, that's how these things are supposed to operate. And, taken aback to the amount of teamwork and happiness and just warm fuzzies that was going on that show. So, amen. Hats off to Dr. John. Hats off to Brother Rob. And if you guys don't mind, I'll even throw something out there for Todd Saxon and his family for cooking us that fantastic meal, inviting us over there for
amazing
for the movie Son of Clowns. And, Lord have mercy. I mean, it was a good time just sitting there cutting up. And of course we had the human power plant, Tiffany Beckler in there, being the blast that she is. I mean, you cannot have a bad time around her. She's just,
she is like a mad scientist with makeup. Oh my
she
God.
Is, man.
Amazing.
So, big hats off for the after party, the meal, and for what he did. He ran all over that con helping us out. And, you know, Stroh's doing his thing. I'm over there trying to panhandle my books. It's, you know, it was very kind of him and very appreciated by us to have him doing what he was doing. So tip of the hat to him and his family. Thank you much.
Yeah, absolutely. And a big shout out to Ronald.
You're awesome, man. You're awesome,
yes,
man.
That's right.
Thank you.
Todd, you and your family are great. And also a big shout out to Ronald Rossman, who was our cosplay director and announcer.
Yeah.
No.
Batman,
he was spot on.
Yeah.
Batman Rock.
And so,
my goodness.
And I guess our guest, Lyle Blackburn, can tell the Comic-Cons we got a lot of great friends. And tonight, thanks to this is how Lyle has come to us. First of all, Greg Bo Watson, who's in Alabama, he's got his hall pass for tonight. He's got an expo he's going to, and he's got some signings he's got to do. He'll be back next week. But when we did CryptoCon, Greg Bo said, John, you've got to call Darth Bill Lancaster. So I called Darth Bill, and we haven't stopped talking since. He's a great guy. He's introduced me to the Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Bunch. And it came up one night. We were talking, and someone said, John, do you know Lyle Blackburn? And I said, well, no. And Darth Bill said, well, he's on my friends list. Go check him out. And so the good guy he is, I sent him a message and friend request. He added me. We've been talking. I hope we're going to talk some more. So, Lyle, welcome to Comic-Con Stars tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Welcome aboard, sir.
You are welcome. That's right.
Welcome, sir. Now, pleasure to have you.
As I sit here looking at this website, LyleBlackburn.com, I see the Beast of Boggy Creek, Beyond Boggy Creek, the Lizard Man, one of my favorites. I see Monstro Bizarro, Boggy Creek Monster, and the Mothman, another one of my favorites. The reason we're talking is because I've been doing a little bit of research and a little bit of work down in Bishopville, South Carolina. By the way, some of the nicest people I've ever met. So, Lyle, tell us how you got interested in all these great cryptid stories and all the research that you do.
Well, it's really something that kind of I was born with, I suppose. You know, going back to my childhood, I was always attracted to horror movies, monsters, monster movies, and things like that. But one thing that really captured my imagination was, you know, the possibility that creatures like Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster or the Yeti, things like that, you know, could be out there, real life monsters, so to speak. And, I started by reading books, and I saw the Patterson-Gimlin film. And then sometime when I was a child, I went to a drive-in and saw a movie called The Legend of Boggy Creek, which was a 1970s horror film based in southern Arkansas about a sort of a southern Sasquatch-type creature that, was seen around the place in Arkansas, which is about 3 hours from where I live in Texas. So that really, for me, kind of brought it home, and I was just fascinated by the stories of, you know, these creatures, and that kind of translated into later I became a writer. I was working for Rue Morgue magazine, which is a popular horror magazine, and just kind of thought, man, you know, I really love the cryptid stories, I love the legends, and just really just wanted to do research on my own, and that's turned into some books, which were very well received. And so now for years I've kind of been doing, you know, more and more research and speaking at all these events around the country, and the television shows started calling and, you know, featuring some of my books or featuring me on the shows. And, it just kind of snowballed into, you know, just, people ask me what I do now. I just say I'm a monster hunter. So, you know, for lack of a better term, childhood dreams do come true.
They sure do. Absolutely.
That's a great thing to say. So your first book was, because I can't remember which one was your first book.
The Beast
Creek,
of Boggy
correct?
Creek was the first.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that one being that, I think that was one. I picked a really good subject there because the notoriety of the old movie, The Legend of Boggy Creek, and nobody had ever written a book about the history of that. Yet so many people who were into Bigfoot and people who were into old horror movies remembered that. So the book was right off the bat was very well received, and I think that was, you know, kind of opened the door for me there.
You know, I remember Sid Vicious, another professional wrestler, telling me stories about the Legend of Boggy Creek. And he's from the Arkansas area. And whenever I was in the area and stuff doing an event, I remember one time he would tell me about the Legend of Boggy Creek and how popular that was, you know, for many years.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, I mean, I was surprised. In some ways, I wrote the book, like I said, literally because I wanted to know the story because I'd seen it as a kid and I knew it was based on true accounts. And as I started digging into it and realizing that, you know, reports and encounters with this creature had gone on ever since then. I mean, there's, you know, modern encounters. And then when I wrote the book, it was just really part of the process of me finding out the truth behind it. And then when I put it out, I realized, you know, I started doing book signings and showing up at events, which range from everything from comic cons to, you know, Bigfoot conventions, and everybody would come up and say, "Oh, Legend of Boggy Creek." And that's when I figured out, man, everybody knows about this. I had no idea.
Amazing.
It really is amazing. Now, how did you get involved with, I'm going to ask about, yes, Lizard Man is now my favorite, but my previous favorite was, of course, the Mothman. How did you get involved in that? Did you go to Point Pleasant, do research? I mean, I'm sitting here looking at John Keel's book, Visitors from Outer Space, you know, the British version of it that I have, and I just love this book. I've had it with me for a long time. So how did you get interested in the Mothman?
Well, that, you know, that's another sort of the heavy hitters of the cryptid universe, so to speak. And I was always, you know, enthralled by that. And, you know, I had John Keel's Mothman Prophecies book. And, you know, I've read about stories of the Mothman off and on in every, you know, Lauren Coleman's books and other things. And, you know, I've been a guest and a featured speaker up there at the Mothman convention. They have the festival they have every year several times, and met Jeff Walmsley, which is the guy who runs that Mothman Museum up there in Point Pleasant. So I had been to the area, kind of went in, looked at all the historical places where the people had sightings. And the way I got involved in that, it's a film called The Mothman of Point Pleasant, which is put out by Small Town Monsters that does documentaries on those subjects. And I first got involved with them when they did the Boggy Creek Monster, which is basically, you know, I'm in the documentary and it's based on all my research basically. And then it worked well. So when they did the Mothman one, I collaborated to write the script on that. And I'm the narrator for that documentary, which has been one of the best selling, certainly one of the best-selling documentaries on Amazon, but not above and beyond that, it's been very well received and very popular. So the Mothman is certainly a subject that people love. So that's how I got involved in that, the Mothman film.
Right. Now, I've got a quick story for you, Lyle. Some people don't love the Mothman. Back when I was teaching, it was around 2002, 2003, young man was in one of my classes, and he came by to see me in my office. He said, was teaching computer science. He said, "You know, I'm having some problems, this and this and this." I said, "Well, I'll be glad to help you." Whatever. I said, "So where are you from?" And he said, "I'm from Point Pleasant, West Virginia." And I was stunned. It's kind of hard to believe that you could actually meet someone from Point Pleasant. It's like meeting someone from Myrtle Beach. There aren't many around. And so he said, "You know, don't you?" I said, "Yes, I do. I like the book." He said, "Well, do you remember the couple that was making out on the football field?" I said, "Yeah, I remember that very well." He said, "Those are my parents." And Lyle, I was stunned. I didn't know if he was telling me the truth or not. But a couple of weeks later, it was homecoming weekend, and a nice I don't know, mid-40s, late-40s couple came walking in with him. And he said, these are my parents, and they wanted to meet you because you like the Mothman. I said, yeah. And his mom handed me a first edition copy of John Keel's The Mothman. She said, I came across this about a week ago, and I decided that I don't want anything in my house to remind me of the Mothman, so I thought you would probably like it better than I do. And so she gave it to me. Still got it to this day, and there was a huge ring of the truth in that statement. She didn't want to talk about it, and she said, I just don't want it around me. So I thought that was my first real introduction to the Mothman and how people react. I mean, I know I've got a friend from one of Darth Bill's friends who has his Bigfoot sighting story, and it's pretty scary. When he talks, every time he talks it and tells it to me, it's just there's a certain ring of this is very real. And he remembers far too many details for it. You know, at least in my mind, it really rings true. I know you've probably talked to a lot of people who have seen, who've had cryptid sightings, haven't you?
Oh yeah, certainly, quite a few. And I mean, those are the kind of reactions they have. I mean, you do have a lot of people who, you know, like us, we're fascinated and enthralled with the whole thing. But the people, in some cases, that have actually experienced an encounter or have seen something, it changes their whole perspective, you know. And they're often traumatized by it. And, you know, you get a range of people who feel privileged to have seen something. And then you get people who just want to kind of erase it from their mind. So, yeah, I've certainly talked to people on both ends of the spectrum. And, you know, Mothman is certainly one where it's almost like every introduction to the Mothman is weird because the whole case is weird. And you do have a lot of people who, you know, the Mothman is just kind of transcends from cryptozoology to harbinger of doom to, you know, the UFO involvement. It just spans a whole lot of paranormal boundaries and, you know, certainly some freaky stuff.
I was going to ask you, is there any strange encounters or occurrences as of late that you've experienced that you would like to share with us thus far in, as you like to call, monster hunting?
In terms of Mothman or just any cryptid?
In general.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's quite a few. Recently interviewed some people who had seen what they described as a quote-unquote pterodactyl at pretty close range, sort of a huge bird-like creature with, you know, no feathers, leathery skin, you know, in some ways bat-like, but not, you know, not a bat, and definitely more bird-like. So, I mean, you know, it's sort of a you know, pterosaur, so, you know, more or less. And, you know, this is down in Texas and Oklahoma. So, you know, very recently we interviewed some people who had those sightings. There's pretty much constantly people with Bigfoot experiences, you know, coming forward, whether these are ones that are old or new. I recently talked to a guy who saw Bigfoot moving across the road in an area where there's been quite a few Bigfoot sightings, and he experienced this when he was younger. And I mean, he saw this thing in the headlights as it more or less casually walked in front of the car, and so he had a good you know, few seconds to observe the creature, and then it disappeared off into the field and woods beyond. He even turned the car to try to shine the headlights to see it longer. And I mean, this guy was just a super credible witness. You know, so, you know, there's pretty much constantly, just looking at a video, a pilot, shot in a river in Louisiana, which appears to show something at least 20 feet long on the, just above the water surface, and then it, as that plane goes over, it submerges, and it's not doesn't look man-made. It's out in this river around with dense woods, and I'm just at a lack of explanation as to what that is, because it's much, much larger than any alligator, you know, that's on record. So, you know, always interesting cases.
That's pretty wild.
I mean, it's pretty much almost a daily basis of, you know, looking into various reports and trying to, you know, determine which ones are credible, which ones are worth, you know, exploring more. And, you know, of course, a lot of that turns up in my books and things. So there's a, you know, there's an outcome and a way to share it. You know, because that's the fun part, is like collecting all this and determining that it's, you know, wow, this is good stuff. And then, you know, having a way to share it, whether that's in a film or whether that's in a book. But everything that I write about or have featured in films is 100% legit witnesses saying that they'd seen something. You know, while we can't say what they saw, you know, I feel certain that all these people experienced something out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We had the Charlotte Crypto Clan about 2 months ago, and a fellow has written a book called Normie, the Lake Norman Monster. That's a kid's book. It's about a sea serpent in Lake Norman, which was a Duke Power-made lake. There have been a lot of sightings of something up there in Lake Norman. There was a Japanese film crew that came by actually right before he had come to CryptoCon, and they went out with him on some boats. They used sonar. They did a number of things to try to, you know, try to see if they could find something. And I think he really, the fellow that wrote the Lake Norman Monster, I think he put it in perspective. He said, you know, wherever you have a man-made dam, 25, 30 years later, you're going to have a 15-foot catfish, and that's just the way it's going to be. And a lot of people can see things like that, and they can say, oh, that's the Loch Ness Monster or whatever. And I think that's a very healthy way of looking at it. There are certain conditions that are going to bring about known phenomena. And in a 15-foot catfish, pretty big catfish, it could be pretty scary at night. But then there are the sightings that are just they're just so for real. And that's what I think is interesting. And you've interviewed tons of people, and you've had to determine who's telling a credible story and who's not. Right?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's some, I don't know, psychology and detective work involved, I think, here. And, you know, I can pretty much, or I feel like I can at least dismiss the more outlandish things right off the bat. I mean, those are pretty easy to tell. You know, other ones are get, you know, range depending on the person. But there's certainly, I mean, even if, and the thing is, even if 5% of these people saw something that was an unknown creature, well, that's all it takes, that these creatures exist. I mean, you could have, you know, 100 people see it, 95 of them thought they saw it and saw something else. But if 5 people actually saw it, then that's enough, you know, that's all you need. So I think it, you know, there is a sort of a hierarchy of which ones are, you know, the most credible. And, you know, then you have a lot of others that, yeah, they may or may not have seen something that, you know, you can't say for sure. But I think that, I mean, just take Bigfoot, for example. There's just some accounts that you simply cannot dismiss, you know. So,
gotcha. So what about the lizard man? Give us your thoughts on the lizard man. I've had the good fortune to speak with a number of people in the last month.
That's Dr.
John in Bishopville. Pardon? That's right. That's my best friend.
That's
now.
Dr. John's best friend, the lizard man.
That's right.
I was kidding. Okay. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Greg,
so,
Greg
Bosman, yeah,
draw
lizard
one
man
up for me.
That's, you know, one I've always been fascinated with. I guess, you know, as a kid, I always loved the Creature from the Black Lagoon movie. And
yeah,
to me,
me too,
the Bishopville Lizard Man was the modern real-life equivalent to people saying they had seen something that, you know, could fit the description of the Creature from the Black Lagoon. So after I had put out and released The Beast of Boggy Creek, and it, you know, had such a, it was such a good seller, so I thought, well, man, this is great. I want to do something else. So I decided, like any like what any normal person would do, I went on a swamp tour, and I decided I was going to go to all the notable creepy swamps all in the southeast. So I went to Honey Island Swamp, Okefenokee, and of course included Skateboard Swamp, which is close to Bishopville, South Carolina, and Skateboard Swamp. It's where people reported seeing this, what the locals referred to as the Lizard Man, starting in the late 80s. And there was a rash of sightings. It was a ton of media coverage unlike you'd ever seen. I mean, this thing was on, you know, Dan Rather was doing features on the Lizard Man. So it was just, you know, it was just a phenomenon. And to me, obviously, you know, Bigfoot, if you say, oh, it's some sort of a an ape, some sort of a primate, you know, okay, we can buy that. But you start getting the lizard men, now you're, you know, you're creeping into the more outlandish sort of things. But what I found with that is, you know, when you think of lizard man, I mean, and a lot of the drawings in the newspapers would reflect these ridiculous looking Godzilla dinosaur things with tails and this and that. But if you look at the descriptions from the actual witnesses, it was much more humanoid. It wasn't, you know, didn't have a long a tail. It was something that, in a way, it come from a swamp. And I thought, you know, I mean, it could even be the case of a Bigfoot that was wet. It was at a skin condition. I mean, any number of explanations to explain what people were seeing. But again, people, you know, credible people had seen something that they had a hard time describing, and that's why the locals dubbed it the Lizard Man, because they felt it had scaly reptilian skin. But I you know, of course, I can't tell you what it is they saw, but to me, the and going to Bishopville and the process of looking into that, speaking to the Sheriff Truesdale, who was the retired sheriff, he was there during that investigation. He had all the police files, everything. And they had looked into it fairly seriously, not under the pretense that it was a, you know, a lizard man, but, you know, whatever it was could hurt people. And they felt it was their duty as law enforcement officers to follow up that. And so luckily, this guy had, you know, taken the witnesses in and made them write statements. They had, you know, spoken to all the locals. And I was able to look at all that. So my book was basically the result of my journey of going there, looking into the case, and telling the story of everything that happened with this bizarre cryptid, you know, known as the Lizard Man. So, it you know, ultimately it's a great story, although ultimately you can't, we can't prove what the Lizard Man was or is at the end of it.
That's interesting. You said that the sightings that you mentioned about the description of Lizard Man didn't have a tail. It was just more reptilious-like, you know, looking with his, that appeared to have scales or whatever. That's interesting. You brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, there was one guy from the Shaw Air Force Base that said he believed it. What he saw had a tail. But the majority of the witnesses did not. And in fact, some of them said they thought it had hair when they saw it. It had moved into the road or whatever. So it's, you know, it's less of a, I think, less of a dinosaur and more of a humanoid creature, which obviously brings up the question of, you know, is it some subterranean dwelling race of humanoids, which people have theorized, is it extraterrestrial? Although I didn't find any corresponding UFO reports with it. But yeah, just a little bit, I don't know, creepier. I mean, the descriptions that the people give are creepier than the goofy looking stuff that they mostly illustrated in the newspaper reports at the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, the president of the chamber last night, she was telling me that Truesdale told her that there was a tree limb. It was about 12 feet from the ground. There was no way to climb up the tree. And that limb, there had been no storms, no anything. It had been calm weather for the last several days. And after some of these sightings, there was this huge, huge tree limb that really a human couldn't break, had been ripped off the tree. And that's what scared her. She was an elementary school teacher at that point. When she found out about that, that's what really frightened her, because that told her that, you know, yeah, people can dress up as a lizard man. That's fine. Scare kids if that's what they want to do. But some things were found that just didn't make sense. And that's what I hear you're saying, is that there was a little bit too much credible evidence that something odd, really odd, was happening, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Something was going on. And, I mean, you have, in almost every cryptid case, you have people coming forward to say that they were responsible for that. And I've seen that. But oftentimes, those claims are even more, are almost harder to, jive than the actual possibility it's something we don't know what it is. And that, you know, Bishopville is no exception, to where people, several people, in fact, claim that they had dressed up and they had been responsible for Christopher Davis seeing something. But they'd always just stop there. It's like, well, what about all the other people? This went over a span of about at least 5 years. So I'm like, okay, for 5 years, you were running around through the woods in some costume, and nobody noticed that it was a costume. And it's just, you know, stuff like that.
You got, buddy.
Yeah, right.
Well, so what do you do? Well, I play golf. Well, I dress up like a lizard man and run through the woods at night.
Maybe you should knit a sweater or something. Like the Swamp Thing story about the doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
Taking the serum and turn to the Swamp Thing, which the story of the Swamp Thing was, it brings out your inner true self, if you will. And being to the doctor,
yeah,
who loved nature.
You're a dirtbag. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of, you know, that the DC Comics Swamp Thing, you know, it's got a little bit of that element to it in a way. And I think in some ways people are, one of the reasons that the media covered this, and it was so, people are just fascinated with the idea of a reptilian human. I mean, if you look back in, even in folklore and things like that, you often had these beings that had, you know, they were snake gods and they were somewhat human, or they were alligator men. You know, there's a movie, The Alligator Man. There's also, and here's another cool thing about the whole Bishopville Lizard Man thing.
Okay.
That as I was digging into the history of the area and looking at the area of Skateboard Swamp and the area of South Carolina in general, there was old Native American tales in which they described a race of beings that had come, they said, from the sea, so I assume from the coast. The name they gave these roughly translated into something called sharp tails. And they said these creatures had these tails, but they were short. They were about a foot long and they were rigid. And these creatures were scaly, although they were human-like. And they existed off of fish. And so the description of these creatures is basically very much like the lizard man. Now, this was something described by the Native Americans, you know, 500 years, going back 500 years before anybody in Bishopville ever came forward and claimed a lizard man sighting. And the major, this Christopher Davis, which had the most sensational encounter, which he was had a flat tire near Skateboard, and he said he was attacked by the creature. I'll tell you, this kid had no way of knowing that, you know, what are the odds that the same thing that the Native Americans, reportedly had seen, that this kid would say he had seen the same thing. There's no way he knew about that. I had to dig for it myself. So, you know, just interesting little things as you kind of start digging into the history and legends of the area and going back to Native American times. So I thought that was kind of a cool, added thing to the story.
Well, now, which Indian tribe?
That we... Oh,
I'm okay. Sorry. Go ahead, Rob. No, that's fine.
No, you go first. I'll have to follow up.
Okay. What I was going to say is, what Indian tribe do you remember that that spoke of the sharp tails?
It's been a while since I've read the book, or I've written the book. I can't tell you offhand the name of that tribe. I'd have to go back and look.
Was it relatively local to South Carolina, or was it? Or
yes.
That's all I was wondering. So one of the South Carolina or Carolina tribes mentioned that.
Yeah, it was the Santee. I want to say Santee tribes, which, you know, there's the Santee rivers and areas named for, and a lot of those names out of there, Wateree and Congaree and Santee, are all named for tribes. But yeah, oh, it's definitely it was a tribe native to that area.
A Carolina tribe. Great. That's what I was interested in. I'll do some asking around myself. That's very interesting. Rob, what was your question?
I was just saying I was going to follow up what you were talking about. I mean, you brought up some very interesting points, because in shows past we talked about possibilities of descendants of the dinosaurs evolving into modern day with all the unexplained phenomenon sightings, and also the possibility of the term Nephilim, which was turned back in biblical times, were half human, half angel, in which Egyptian gods, a lot of Egyptian gods that they worshipped, had the animal heads and the human bodies, and they were considered giants back in the day, you know, before the time of the flood. And the Nephilim was supposedly wiped out during that time, but I mean, could we possibly be seeing a descendants of those giants now with the Bigfoot sightings, Sasquatch, Lizard Man, and all the others that we've been experiencing? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that often comes into the conversation, and I mean, I'm no expert on that end of the field of the Nephilim and all that sort of stuff, but you know, my view about all, you know, the possible theories to explain these, you know, you just have to look at everything, because, mm-hmm. you know, at this point, it's a big open case, and all, you know, no theory or hypothesis is a bad one. It's just, you know, everybody trying to rationalize what's being seen. So I don't really have any expertise about whether these, you know, these creatures are, you know, the Nephilim, but they certainly could be any of those type things. And like even a dinosaur, you know, the theory of dinosaur evolution, that if some dinosaurs had survived this and had developed today, there's a creature called the dinosauroid, where they theorize that over time it would have developed a more anthropomorphic, which means more human-like, anatomy, because if the brain grew and it stood upright, then it would take on mm-hmm. characteristics which would be similar to what's described in the Bishopville case. And I've got some pictures in my book that illustrate that, almost like what people would project the dinosaurs could evolve to in this case, which is very cool to see a model of that. So, you know, some scientists and archaeologists came up with that theory. So there's another one. You know, it's a descendant dinosaur. It's, you know, giants, Nephilim, reptilian, extraterrestrials. And, of course, mostly for me, I'm just more of a cryptozoologist. I just look at them as cryptid cases of people seeing animals or monster type creatures. And, you know, what is in my approach is, are people seeing, you know, did they actually see something, and is there a creature there behind all of it? So I kind of I come at it from a, I don't know, you know, grew up hunting and camping with my father, so in some ways it's just what weird things are in the woods, and you know,
yeah.
They're sort of like transformed from childhood monsters to serious sort of investigative journalist endeavors to determine, you know, what really went on in these cases. What do people describe, and you know, to lay out the full story.
Very well put. In fact, Rob, we'll have Dr. Aaron Judkins on November 30th. He has got a PhD in biblical studies, and he's an archaeologist by trade. And he talks
Fantastic.
About being on a dig. Yeah, and he will be the guy to ask that question and others too. That's one reason I was so pleased that we could have Lyle on here and then have him on in a couple of weeks so we can get a couple different sides. I mean, you know, sure, movie monsters, but there's junk out there in the woods that's really scary.
Well, here's the thing too, to think about, you know, we're mammals, you know what I mean? And who's to say that in time, you know, like I think I read something a while back about scientists talking about the T-Rex, for example. The dinosaur T-Rex, you know, and the fact that some dinosaurs had like a capacity for intelligence, actual intelligence. And who's to say that through time, I mean, that the descendants of that age kind of mutated into kind of like a, like you said earlier, like a humanoid type, right, creature that has capacity to think and to, you know, rationalize in their own way. I mean, that's very well possible. I mean, through evolution.
Right. I mean, you know, kind of the same sort of theory that, you know, Neanderthals what Bigfoots are. You know, it's it's all these sort of extant, so-called extinct creatures or extinct lines of Homo sapiens or humans, Homo erectus, Neanderthal, or something that, you know, branch of the tree that, you know, we think went extinct that really didn't. So there's all those things, and it does play so many disciplines into it. Like you said, a guy who's got biblical background with archaeology, you know, you've got biology, you know, you've got investigative journalists. You've got all these fields that play into these cases. You know, you've got even people who study folklore. You know, is it modern day folklore? You know, is it simply that? So you have all these various ways you can explain these things. But ultimately, again, it boils down to the fact that people are seeing and reporting something. You know, it's just a question of what is it?
That's true. And,
you know,
you had sightings around the world, you know, with hieroglyphics and caves and that are just pretty much describing mostly the same thing throughout the world. I mean, you can't help but believe that, you know, not all these people could be wrong. You know what I mean? So it does make you think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it either totally supports the case or blows the whole case, because either everybody has some tendency to see all this stuff globally, you know, how many can there really be? Or people, you know, have seen these things over time and have recorded them, you know, in paintings or in spoken word or stories and whatever method they had, which makes sense, because if they've been here, they would have been here all along, and certainly people before us would have interacted and seen them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell you down where I live, which is Pawleys Island and Georgetown, haints and boo hags are really feared by part of this population. There are areas that many people, I used to sell life insurance, a lot of those people still believe this. And they say there are areas down here that they will never tread because it is just too frightening for them. They say things have been seen for years, you know, hundreds of years, and they're not going to go in those woods. Don't know what they've seen, but I know that they're certain that they've seen something or their relatives have seen something, and they're not going to have any part of it. So I think what we call legends and folklore sometimes are, you know, really maybe stories of things that actually do go bump in the night, or at least things we need to be afraid of. I don't know, Lyle, have you had much experience with my neck of the woods and all the stuff down here?
I mean, somewhat, yeah. I'm familiar with tales out of Carolina from the Bigfoot, Old Nobby, Beast of Bladenboro. You know, there's some devil monkey, the watery walking bear. There's all these what I've called regional names for cryptids. You know, and certainly I was introduced to the term haint during the case of the Bishopville Lizard Man, which Sheriff Truesdale told me, you know, haint, which was like a ghost. You know, I hadn't heard that term, but it was cool to. I really love, that's one thing I love about this is to, you know, it involves the region and it's got that flavor, you know, the regional flavor for each of these cases. And that's what I find fascinating, you know, with the, you know, the folklore and the tales and the legends and what people say they've seen. And to me, it's like, well, the fact that these people won't go into the woods, that makes it a reality in some sense of the word, because to them it is something. There's something to it, whether it's a haint, it's a ghost, it's a wild man, a wood booger, or whatever it is living in the woods. So, you know, I love those stories, and it's just so many of them, and a lot of the ones in South Carolina I really like. North Carolina, South Carolina,
yeah, they're pretty neat. Now, Dave Atwell, I know you've been quiet. You're a writer. You do a lot of writing. And Lyle, you do a lot of writing. Lyle, writing can be tough sometimes, can't it?
Oh, yeah. It's something that you have to work at. And it's, you know, some days the words flow, some days they don't. And the way that the particular books I'm writing is, a lot of it is the research, you know, kind of digging back to the source of the stories. There's all kind of nonsense on the internet, you know, this and that, but I try to distill that back to the source, and whenever possible try to speak to the original witnesses and get the story firsthand. So that takes a ton of time to do. I mean, my most recent book, Beyond Boggy Creek, In Search of the Southern Sasquatch, covers about 10 states. And I mean, I'm literally, I have Bigfoot history, sightings, legends, newspaper clippings to modern witnesses. It's a huge area. It took me an insanely long time to do the research. And then of course, then you've got to write it and make this into a kind of a cohesive tale. So yeah, it's hard work.
I would imagine trying to get all that research, you know, the ability to retain it along with living a regular, your regular existence, you know, you gotta file all this information in right beside remembering to pay the light bill and getting to work at 8:30 and all that kind of stuff. And, I know any type of research I've done for my books, it's the most fascinating side of it, but on the flip side, it's the hardest side of it to actually, you know, dig down and find out. And you've got a bigger fish to fry than I do, because you're conveying, you know, eyewitness accounts. You're conveying, you know, I would call it semi-fact, because of course it's not proven, but you're conveying words that, you know, other people have said, whereas me, I write about something that doesn't exist. I write about my world, you know, except, of course, for the Jack the Ripper book that, to a certain extent, Jack the Ripper is kind of a human cryptid, you know, to a certain point of view, you know, because Jack the Ripper could have been anything. And there's really no telling. But, yeah, I don't envy you with having to, you know, compile all that information. I don't know how you do it because, you know, you hit the nail on the head earlier with and I've said it in past shows, you know me, I'm the naysayer when it comes down to a lot of these things. And, you know, I've always said that a person that's too anxious to talk about it, to me, kind of loses some credibility. It's the guys, I mean, yeah, you're out in the woods. If you're out there staking things out and you're actually, you know, with a group of, you know, 5 dozen guys out there and we're combing certain acreage of property and then we see something, okay, you're prepared. You're ready. That's when you're out there looking for something, all right? But when you're driving home from work and you get this scaly-looking thing that jumps in front of your car, you can't tell me that there's a certain amount of exhilaration from that. You can't tell me you're going, oh, wow, that was neat, that just happened. You can't tell me that your britches were clean. You know what I mean? And I've always found that the people who seem to want to belch the information don't seem to have the same credibility as the ones that are like, you know, like Dr. John was speaking about those folks with the Mothman. You know, she was like, here's the book. I just want this out of my house. I'm done talking about this. And you see the same things with guys that go through, you know, war and everything. They come back, and I've always said that the people who enjoy war have something wrong with them. You know what I mean? Have some
yeah.
type of psychological, yeah, I don't know, for the need to exaggerate or something, but, you know, by and large, the guys who really do the job are the ones that go in there and do it and come home and don't speak on it. And, again, you know, regardless of what it might be, when you find something that pops up, you don't like that. There's no way that it can't last. It can't leave some type of impact and a psychological scar, if you will. I'm here to tell you, if I see something like that, and we've talked about it on the show before, I don't know if I could tell anybody. That might be something I would take to the grave, and you guys would never know about it. You know, hey, I think I saw a lizard man. Nah, Dave, that was a Sasquatch with a raging case of plaque psoriasis. You know, how many people would actually come out and you'll be able, and that's what I feel for the sheriff you were speaking on. By allowing this guy, you know, he has to investigate that hasn't been proven to exist. But if he doesn't investigate, this thing does something, then he's held accountable for not doing anything about it. You know what I mean? I mean, what kind of horrible situation could that be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, his hands were tied. But, yeah, certainly what you're saying is exactly my thoughts as well. I mean, people, I like what I call a neutral witness or somebody who even doesn't want to see Bigfoot, for example. But the guy who
right.
is a Bigfoot hunter and he can go to the state park every weekend and see one, I'm just not buying it. But some old lady,
yep.
some lady who doesn't even think about Bigfoot, doesn't care, tells me she saw something standing in the road at 10 a.m. in the morning and got a look at it for 10 seconds before it turned and ran in the woods, and she's completely freaked out and barely wants to talk to me. I'm like, this lady saw something, you know.
Right.
So that's the kind of witness.
And here's
my
panties to prove it. Yeah.
Well, I didn't ask the lady for those, but I just took the word for it.
But it does bear wondering because, I mean, and if you think about it, as a matter of fact, it's a funny thing we learned about retention ponds. You know, now whenever they're putting up shopping centers and all that, you see they got these little ponds that they put up. They were remodeling the building that I was working at, and they had to drain one of those retention ponds. And the amount of work that went into draining that thing, you thought we were moving, you know, Ming vases and everything. But they were pumping everything from catfish to bass to turtles to gar. I mean, we're talking brackish water fish, bass. I mean, freshwater, brackish water, and even some saltwater fish were found in that retention pond next to my building. And one of the ecologists that were there, had, you know, I looked at him and said, how in the world does this happen, you know? And he said what happens is these birds fly, and they fly on the swamp, and they land in the swamp, and they step in a fish bed, you know, an egg bed of, you know, fish, okay? And it gets the eggs get on their feet. So then they fly away, and they land in a retention pond, and the eggs wash off. Eggs hatch. Now we got, you know, those fish in that pond. So all that being said, it leaves one to wonder for as many, you know, with stuff like that going down, how many different type of evolved type of species could we be, you know, how many times they talk about stuff in the sewers, you know, where you get the souvenir alligator and, or the little souvenir snake and the thing, that thing actually starts growing and you're like, oh, I can't have this, and you pitch it out in the woods, and next thing you know, they're finding some 30-foot anaconda out in the woods, and it's some guy who pitched one in the, you know, in the woods 10 years ago. So there's no telling what kind of mutated stuff could be floating around out there.
Exactly.
I think that was well put, Dave. Well, you know,
of course, I wonder about deforestation. You know, just real quick on that is deforestation.
Oh,
you know,
no,
they talk about. No, they, you know, they just talk about how we're losing homes, you know, by cutting down the trees and expanding, you know, civilization, homes, businesses, and all that jazz. It's kind of surprising that more stuff has not turned up just by us cutting down as much woodland,
you know,
as we have.
That's an interesting point, especially when you got overseas in different parts of Africa where they're tearing down the rainforest and you've seen all these diseases spreading out to different areas. I mean, do you know, taking down our forests and our wildlife could be, you know, a curse, if you will. So yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's always repercussions from messing with nature. I mean, you know,
yes, sir.
Just no doubt about it.
Right. Well, so we've talked to you. I know we've enjoyed it. We've touched on a lot of topics. What are you doing now? You've got the television show you're working on. And tell us just a little bit about that, just so that everyone can hear. And then what projects are you working on that you can tell us about? I know you can't tell everything, but so tell us a little bit about the series that you're working with and how all that's going.
I shot some episodes of that Strange Evidence show, which are starting to air on Discovery Science, so done that. I'm sort of always working on a book. That's sort of the given there. And I'll be doing, I'm going to be working on another film starting next year, which is another small town monsters one along the lines of the Mothman in Boggy Creek. We're going to do The Beast of Bray Road, which is a werewolf dogman well-known story about those. We're going to do that one, so that's going to be, you know, fun times. Haven't done a Dogman book or film, so interested to do that. And you know, got something else in development as well, which will hopefully be announced in the next couple of months. But it's another really big project that I'm excited about.
Great. Here's Bray Road.
Bray Road's in Wisconsin.
Okay.
There's a book. There's a Linda Godfrey is a kind of the writer behind that, who's investigated the cases of the Dog Man, and the most notable one being the Beast of Bray Road. and you know, dogman sightings occur all over, but there seems to be a concentration in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, some of those areas. There's a lot of these, you know, people seeing bipedal canids that, you know, for lack of a better term, real wolfman or wolf, you know, werewolf type looking creatures. So those are some of your more scary cryptids, undoubtedly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds very interesting, and we look forward to seeing that when it comes out. I've got some friends that have talked about Dogman, and they have a real attachment to that. In fact, one of them thinks that's what he saw, that it really wasn't Bigfoot. But that being not being the case doesn't matter. We have really enjoyed having you on our show tonight. It was good talking to you, hearing about what you think, some of your investigations, some of the projects you're working with, and we'll do our best to see if we can get you over in this neck of the woods sometime this year. If you got a good Carolina invitation, you think you might drive by sometime?
Yeah, definitely. I'm always up for that, and you know, I've been in coming that area sometimes when I can. So yeah, I'm always up for some good Southern hospitality and monster cases.
And some barbecue at. Do what? What'd you say, Dave?
We got plenty of swamp.
Oh yeah,
well, I'm partial to swamp, so you know any monster cases involving swamps is definitely keep me posted on those, because I'm kind of the swamp guy at this point, I guess.
All right, and we'll have to have some shrimp and grits at Harry and Harry too. Did you get to eat there when you
That's
were in
right.
Bishopville?
I certainly did several times and enjoyed it. And they were quite interested in. I told them while I was there, I was saying I was going to write a book and that sort of thing. So, you know, I actually did it. So, it'd be nice to go back and visit sometime down there as well.
It was really interesting. I was talking with Harry Elmore last night at the chamber board meeting, and he looked at me. He said, "Don't you do the caricatures next to the sky wheel?" I said, "Yes, sir, I do." He said, "Oh, you did a caricature of me and my whole band." And I sure did, and so I got to look at the rest of the board and say, "See, I told you we did caricatures. He's my witness." And it was great, you know. It's just someone that we'd met. He was out playing with his band at Plyler Park in Myrtle Beach, and remembered me running around between the two artists and all that. So it was a lot of fun. And Bishopville sure is a great town. I hope to see some marvelous things coming out of there, and hopefully we'll have another lizard man sighting. So look, Lyle, thank you very much for being with us tonight. Papa Stroh, what you got going on this week?
This Saturday night, I'll be in Monroe, North Carolina, National Guard Armory for XWW Pro Wrestling Aftershock. Bell time is 7:30. Looking forward to seeing my XWW family once again. I touched up on XWW a little bit in my recent Facebook post, talking about my review of the 30 for 30 with Nature Boy Ric Flair, and how Ric Flair's son, Reed Flair, was at one time a XWW United States champion, and they even showed the belt in the documentary, which I thought was really cool. But if you guys get a chance, go check out the review of the 30 for 30 Ric Flair documentary I posted on Facebook. Be looking out for me soon, appearing on Good Behavior on TNT, Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right after The Walking Dead. And also be looking out for the Rat Pack, premiering soon with myself, Daryl Rackley, C. Thomas Howell, Randy Jones, and David Shifter, and a great cast and crew. Good family film. That'll be premiering really soon. For more information on TV and wrestling and film, go to my official website at Stroh.com, Facebook, Stroh the Maestro, Instagram at Stroh Maestro, and on Twitter at The Stroh.
Thank you, sir. We will do that. Dave Atwell, what you got going on?
Nothing as exciting as you gentlemen do, just slinging hash, trying to keep the lights on, and continue to work diligently on the Hunger series, and continue the push on that. And we've got a few other little things working on that, that you know, you try to have a side project to the project, because I'm sure Mr. Lyle can confirm, sometimes when you're writing, you don't necessarily hit a block, like a writer's block where you can't think. You hit a spot where you're going, where do I need to go with this next? And sometimes it's better to push yourself away from the laptop. But nevertheless, there's no such thing as downtime. You got to keep the wheel pushing. And got a few other little things I'm dabbling in, trying to mess with, and looking forward to getting that out. And we're actually looking into putting together a trailer, probably about a minute long, maybe 90 seconds, to my first book to post on YouTube. So we're kind of swatting around that idea and everything to help promote the series and everything, because a lot of times you get that visual that really kind of stirs the excitement. So, you know, us authors, man, we're living below the poverty line. We got to do anything we can to generate some excitement for the book series. So that's what we'll be working on. And no better time than the winter, because I don't like the sweat. So now's the time to strike if you're going to do something outdoors. So we're looking forward to doing that.
Wonderful. That sounds great. And, Lyle, we know what you're working on. As far as me, trying to get the next series of Comic-Cons up and underway. So I will have some announcements coming up in the next week. And I want to thank Papastro Maestro, Dave Atwell, and our guest, Lyle Blackburn. Thanks, gentlemen, for being on here. Let's try to do it again, okay?
Absolutely. Had a pleasure. It was a pleasure having you on this evening, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoyed it.
Great having you, Mr. Blackburn. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you guys have a great week, and we'll see you next week on Comic-Con Stars.
Good night, everybody.